Welcome to 2010. It's January 6th, 2010. Three Kings Day. Happy Epiphany to our Christian and Zoroastrian friends. Apropos of Three Kings Day, we have not three but four kings of design joining us here today on Burning Down the House at Heritage Radio Network. Manuel Saez and a bunch of his Argentine friends. Why don't you introduce yourselves? Go.
Okay. My name is Pedro Reisig. I was born in Argentina, grew up in New York, if it is I grew up actually, and I'm back in Buenos Aires since about 20 years ago.
Well, welcome to Burning Down the House, where we tear down, lay forth, and build up the elements, the ideas, the passions, the obsessions, the attitudes that inform and direct our built environment. Our next king.
I am Matias Fernandez Murs, Pedro's business partner. We have a company named Vaca Valiente back in Buenos Aires.
Yeah. Now, that means like friend of a cow in Spanish, is that right?
Like brave cow.
Brave
courageous.
Cow.
Courageous.
Courageous, yeah.
Well, we like that because here on Heritage Radio Network, we talk about cattle and food quite a lot. And I think, you know, your approach of happy cow products becoming part of our interior built environment is kind of cool. How did you get into the whole, I mean, okay, we know that you come from cattle country. I suppose they're just steer hides everywhere around, and you thought, well, that's a great material to use, no?
Not exactly. First of all, we basically use reconstituted leather, which is made from industrial scraps. So we come from cattle country. We love barbecue. We just love to eat the meat. And it's a good point to clarify, cows are killed for meat, not for leather.
And so then the hides are left over.
The hides are left over. It's a commodity now, so depending on supply and demand. But we really use industrial waste scraps that are milled and bonded into a new material, a very interesting industrial material, basically unknown to the design world, called reconstituted leather.
Yeah, does it have a special name? You know, like pleather would be plastic leather. Do you have a special name for it?
In English, it's known as bonded leather.
Bonded leather.
We are calling it recycled leather because it's in a way more appealing and it's more informative.
And it sounds better, yeah.
That's
so
right.
Where does it come from?
Where does it come from? Yeah. From two things, basically. From the tannery shavings when they need to get the thickness right for the natural grain. And from smaller leather industries like shoes and leather goods that have a lot of scrap.
Sure, of course. Those would otherwise just be discarded.
Otherwise, they are put into bricks or just into the landfills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we go any further, let me mention that this evening's program is sponsored by Fairway. Now, at Fairway, we see the finished meat. We really don't see hides. We have to should inquire as to where they get their beef and what do those producers do with their hides. I mean, here in the United States, we must have an enormous amount of leftover leather. I would think that you could open a recycled leather factory here and do quite well.
Well, worldwide, I think maybe 5% of the leather scraps actually get taken advantage of by the bonded leather industry. Basically because it's not a product that has much demand. Part of what we're working towards is to make that byproduct, the reconstituted leather, a more appealing and used product by the design industry.
Now, looking at your website, I see that you create amusing shapes. Tell me about your product line.
Mm-hmm. Well, we try to approach leather in an innovative way. If you take leather as a material, you can see it has been, it's probably one of the oldest materials for design you can think of.
I'm sure.
From the first shoes to the first coating. And if you take leather today, you can see it's basically the same. We're using it for the same purposes.
In many of the same ways.
Yeah, we're still doing shoes, we're still doing bags, we're still doing coats.
Mm-hmm.
And we approach the material in a way to, we thought, hey, this is a material that hasn't been explored,
mm-hmm.
and has a million opportunities there. First thing we did is, and in our first approach, we ended up discovering or learning about this amazing material, this the bonded leather, that's actually not comparable to the natural leather. One of the things hasn't been so appealing is it used to be seen as a second quality material.
I see.
And for us, it's a completely different material that allows us to do things in a very different way.
Is that because it's not as supple and flexible as...
Well, all the mechanical properties are actually very different. It's not comparable. It's
right. It's like MDF, like fiberboard compared to natural wood.
Yeah. I see.
If you're a wood lover, you'll say, you know, you might not like fiberboard, but...
Well, does reconstituted or recycled leather bend? Can you...
Oh, yeah. In fact, it's got a wide, wide range of uses and properties that...
And I would say that even in some cases it's even better than real leather.
Well, certainly because it's consistent in thickness and in color.
Yeah, the presentation is an industrial presentation, not as in the natural leather in which you depend on the cow and its history. It has its own battles. It has its
the
own
scars, the marks.
Everything in our case is an industrial presentation material. Comes in rolls. We can control the thickness, the density. There are a couple of variables there we can control very easily and allow us to create a great variety of designs. And
but from your website, it was hard for me to understand what things that you were designing. I saw pencil holders, small uh-huh. things. Is that your focus right now?
Well,
good point. One way to put it is, as Matthias said, natural leather has its own history. Since we're inheriting like the reincarnation leather, we are giving it its second life.
I like that, reincarnation leather.
That's exactly how we see it. So we feel we have to give it a different meaning, since natural leather is so full of its own meaning from the animal, the age, the conditions. So we are taking this hybrid raw material and giving it the meaning we'd like to, and we'd like to have fun. So
okay, but you still haven't told us what you're actually making from this. Spit it out.
As products, we do tabletop, desktop accessories, some architectural applications. We now have four product lines.
What kind of architectural
For example, we could do moldings, we do doorknobs, we do some handles.
Leather doorknobs?
That's right. Yeah.
Wow.
A lot of these ideas come from historical uses. Drawers used to have leather pull straps. That's okay. Basically a knob.
A long time ago.
Sure. Hinges also.
Right.
Hooks.
Hooks. From horn, yeah, but I don't know, from leather?
Oh, yeah. We just... presented today at the Museum of Modern Art some hooks and hangers made out just of leather. In fact, that's one of our premises, to do products just with that material as a structural material. We don't cover things with leather. And we've found a way to give it structural rigidity. So it stands on its own.
So is MoMA going to pick up some of your items for their design collection?
They have been. We've been in their catalog for the past 3 years.
That's great.
And we have a great dialogue with them. They find it whimsical, innovative, and we're looking to get our products out there.
Now, Manuel, do you use resurrection leather in any of your projects?
I wouldn't say in my projects. However, I do have all Vaca Valiente's products throughout my office. And in my house.
He's a real Christian.
I'm a believer.
You're a big fan.
No, I think they, you know, the products that Pedro and Vaca Valiente do, I think they bring a fun aspect to the everyday things that you do. And I think that is important to actually have just a little touch of, you know, just get a smile on little things. It could be anything, you know.
Well, after the horrible last 9 or 10 years that we've had, a little smile is a good idea.
You bet.
I think it's time to take a little break. Let's have some cowboy music in honor of cow country.
Give me a home where the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. Home, home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. How often at night, when the heavens are bright with the light of the glittering stars, I stood there amazed, and I asked as I gazed, does their glory exceed that of ours? Home, home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day.
Well, talk about hybrid. There's a cowboy song sung by a Harvard-educated folk singer from New York, from the Hudson Valley. That was Pete Seeger. And I would never, ever have expected that he actually recorded that. But now I stand corrected. Talking about, let's get away from the leather for a moment. Let's just rumble it up a little bit and put our attention on Manuel here. Manuel Saez and his design group. As I understand it, since we last spoke, you've gotten an award from the Cooper Hewitt.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Tell us what was that?
What it was, the Cooper Hewitt, every year they do the design week. And as part of the design week, they pick products in different areas. And also they have a category of products that is called People's Design Award, which is everybody can vote on designs that are nominated for that category. One of our projects was nominated, and it's called a CMYK, which is a folding electric bicycle.
Why CMYK? I mean, people in the print business know that that's
yeah.
Cyan, magenta, yellow, and,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
and something else.
Black.
CMYK, it comes from the bicycle is going to be introduced in a partnership with a company that's called Kid Robot. And a part of
Kid Robot. Okay.
And a part of the strategy was to do something that would be appealing to their fan base or to the followers. And
Old are the followers of Kid Robot?
I would say between 8 years old to 15 mainly.
So this is intended to be a low cost folding bicycle?
Not really. It's
so these are kids with parents who've got money.
Maybe, however you want to label
hey Curtis,
it.
Kids and adults. I know plenty of adults who love Kid Robot. Yeah. So
Kid Robot, I think it's a very strong brand. However,
where have I been? Is this a Saturday morning cartoon phenomenon?
I don't know. It is. You know, their main business is small vinyl toys. And the idea behind the whole thing is they have a few characters, and they invite different artists to have their take on the characters. And
so your folding bicycle is based on a Transformer style character that they have?
No, the
unfolds
idea
unfolds and becomes a robot.
The idea behind the CMYK is that we will have sharp, bright colors behind it. So you get the four colors of the printing process, and which is they're very compelling when you actually see them in painted on a painted bike. So, mm-hmm. So the bikes will come in different colors, and then the four different colors. That's
what I heard a rumor that this was also an electric bicycle.
It is an electric bike. The whole idea of the product itself is to complement public transportation. So in situations that either you drive or you walk half an hour to take the bus or the subway, you have this product that you can actually take it with you on the subway or in the bus. So
Did you make a working prototype?
Well, we have absolutely. We have production parts.
You know, I looked at the pictures that you sent around, and I couldn't figure out where the motor was.
That is truly the innovation on the bike. And really, it's, you know, today in the market, there exist two kinds of products. You have folding bikes and you have electric bikes.
Right.
Folding bikes are good for portability, folding, and storage.
Sure.
Electric bikes are good for assisting going through long distances. However, each one of them have different issues.
So does this have an electrified hub?
It doesn't have a hub. It has a motor that assists you in the pedaling.
Where is the motor located?
It is located right near the rear wheel.
So there's an idler wheel, and the motor is mounted to the frame, and it drives the wheel.
There's a ring with teeth. It's a gear ring that engages the motor, and the motor is powered by a.
So it's in the drivetrain with the sprocket.
Next to it, on the other side. So on the one side you have the chain on the sprocket, mm-hmm. on the other side you have the electric motor. But this is, I think, to me, the innovation of the product, that the motor is so small, yet it gets you to where you want to go.
So it's just a little bit of a boost.
It's a boost.
And where do the batteries come?
The battery goes on the mainframe.
I see. So the batteries don't slip into the tubes of the frame or anything like
that? Well, there's one main tube because the bike is so small that there's only one tube.
Wow.
On the whole bike. So, and in that tube is where the batteries are.
It's pretty interesting engineering that you can get all that stress in just one strut. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are other things going on though, but it's just one main tube in it.
You had someone wanted to get into the with Manuel. Please let's stop being so polite.
No, I'm just listening a little more about the project. I actually have tried the bike in the Emmanuel's office.
And did you like it?
Well, we had a lot of fun with it. I can put it that way.
How much does it weigh when you fold it up?
When you fold it and when you don't fold it, it's the same weight. It's about 15 to 18 pounds. I'm not exactly sure, but it's about 15 pounds.
It's kind of heavy I suppose you can wheel it around.
Well, if you compare that to an electric bike, it's 70 pounds.
Wow.
So it's considerably lighter.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you compare that to a racing bike, it's considerably heavy.
Yeah, right.
I think it's really interesting how he's looking to fill the gap. Considering he's a friend of mine, I still could criticize him as a colleague, but I find it, I think it's very intelligent where he's putting his focus. He's not trying to just put out a new product. He's trying to solve a problem.
Well, I think that's
I think that's very important.
I think it's nice to bring new ideas as a present into the world to drive forward an advancement. And certainly a great idea as compared with a moto, a little moped or something mm-hmm. like that, which go a little too fast and people get hurt with. So this is a nice, gentle alternative.
Mm-hmm. I think, in many ways, and when I look at the industry, I think the bicycle industry are too tied up with what the old paradigm of a bicycle is or what the old paradigm of a scooter is.
Right.
And they're not really looking at what the need is and not finding out what is the really a product that will actually make sense. And so we have bicycles with a battery and a drive motor that really don't make sense mm-hmm. because they're never going to be a motorcycle. They're never going to be a car.
Well, the Razor scooter fad, and mm-hmm. some of those then were motorized, took it a step further. It was better than a skateboard,
mm-hmm.
Faster than a skateboard, mm-hmm. more maneuverable. So this is another hybridized sort of product.
Yeah, yeah, and I think the motorized scooters or the motorized kick scooters, they have an advantage over other products. However, if we have there's a size issue, and there's also especially if you use an internal combustion engine, you have a lot of other issues associated with
it. Oh, sure. You've got the fuel.
You get the fuel. You get the smell and the maintenance and other things with it. So with our product, we try to bridge all the issues. I mean, we definitely don't have this solution, but I think we have a new way of looking at things that I think is going to challenge the status quo and hopefully move things forward.
Now, for having been awarded the People's Choice.
Just let me clarify on that. We did not get the top prize.
Oh, you didn't get the top?
No, we got the second prize. However, given everything considered and who we are, I think the top prize went to IDEO, which is the top design firm in the world. We got the second prize. I think we're pretty happy with it.
So have they added your bicycle to their design collection there at the Cooper Hewitt? No? No, they didn't. Yeah. They didn't buy one.
No, I don't think they will either.
Oh, what a pity. What a pity. Let's get back to you guys from the Brave Bulls. You know, while you're in New York, you might find it interesting to go to the Professional Bull Riders semi-championship that's happening this weekend at Madison Square Garden. We were talking about Madison Square Garden earlier and what a disaster it is as a replacement for the beautiful Penn Station 40-some years ago, almost 50 years ago now. But we're having bull riding this weekend in New York. Yeah, I'm hoping to be able and check it out.
Are they real bulls or they're mechanical? Real,
they are.
I know
they
how to ride the mechanical
American
ones.
Bucking bulls.
Oh, they're the real thing.
The real thing. Ooh. And they're really talk about brave bulls. The bulls are really the stars of the event. And the cowboys who get thrown off, they do their best not to get thrown off in 8 seconds. But
well, we're kind of their alter ego because we're afraid of brave bulls.
But you like the happy
ones. We like
ones.
The underdogs. We like the brave cows. Cows are not generally seen as brave, but I think they are in their own right.
Now, what other? I mean, before you got into resurrection leather or reclaimed leather, I like resurrection leather.
That adopted,
good. Yeah. What other? Now, Pedro, your background is as an architect. So then, you've shifted over time into industrial design because why?
Because I could make it sound coherent. I'll try that, and then I'll tell you the truth. Okay.
Let's start with the truth.
The truth.
We can spin it
okay.
better.
Okay. I think that's sounds good. I love leather. I moved back to my homeland, and part of that moving was deciding to do things I loved and not things I thought were good or important. I tried to leave that behind, and I fell in love with leather and the challenge of giving it a new use, and that's basically, I forgot about architecture. I wanted to forget about it, but I discovered myself as a leather architect.
So, interesting. A leather architect. That'll play really well in the East Village.
Thank God the East, not the West, right? No, no discrimination
or
intended.
Or both, yeah. So did you do leather architecture, or are you doing leather architecture as a part of your industrial design
well,
career?
Well, I mean, architecture in the broad sense of the world, word, not world, or world, if you want.
Broadly speaking, when an architect designs anything, it could be architecture, or it could just be, you know, a thing.
Right.
We did talk about that with Manuel a few weeks ago about good design and ugly design and some things that are functional and very popular in mainstream we might find to be unsightly. But, you know, tastes differ.
That's right. Absolutely.
And so how did you guys get together in this business? Did you meet up at a barbecue stand or?
Well, we were out on the range one night, you know, gathering up the cattle.
With your lassos.
That's right. We ran into
singing your South American cowboy songs, which are probably more like tango music.
We're urban cowboys.
I see.
Definitely.
And you're in Buenos Aires?
We're in Buenos Aires. We go out at night, Maddie more than me at this stage. And we met up, I think, because fate had us meet up. We met at the university. He's actually an ex-student of mine. And he got on board after the company went through its experimental stage and really put in the guts and the business mind and brought it to market.
So, Matthias, did you have a wealthy industrialist father who gave you some seed money to get this going?
No, I did not.
No?
No.
You sold magazines on the street corners until you had some together?
No, it wasn't about funding the project. It was about putting the right energy in its place. I didn't get into our business partnership because of funding.
Mm-hmm.
We did it because it was right at the point. I think I started putting the energy the company required at that point. That's a little.
That's a good tale for these days, where no one has any cash, but people have a lot of energy and a lot of interest and a lot of time.
That's a lot of the way we do things at Vaca Valiente. Every time we go and present a new project to everybody, they always start, well, okay, but how much is this going to cost? And we always go and say, I don't know, we can maybe start even by not having costs or reducing it to the minimum, but people are now afraid of even getting together to think a project because of the costs.
Right.
And this is making a lot of projects not even get to the dream phase.
You try to overcome that with enthusiasm and vision.
Definitely.
Yeah, money's never been an issue, as Maddie says. And I think that's part of the Argentine culture. You know, it's been through so many crises, so many incredible things. Yeah. People don't live for the money. Money's not an issue, really. It's about opportunities and about making things work for your personal life and socially. Money is not an issue, for better or for worse. So when we say business partner in Argentina, we mean the guy who has the business mind, not the wallet.
Uh-huh. Okay. Interesting.
And there's another conceptual point we approach from Vaca Valiente, that most of the projects require capital and not money. And that is always... It's always something...
What's the difference between capital and money? I mean,
money is an expression of capital, but it's not capital itself.
I see.
Most projects, even most people, employees, they need some things in their life, not necessarily money. They need a place to sleep. They need a place to eat. They need a place to go out, meet their girlfriend, whatever they do. Money itself...
Do you organize places for your workers to live? Is this like a commune?
It's not something that we do. Not in that sense, but it is a way in which we approach new projects.
So being part of a larger community is important to the way that you work. Is that what I'm understanding?
No, I'm not sure.
You know what? I think I know what Matthias means, and I think he means that use creativity in order to compensate for the lack of cash. And cash sometimes pays for things, but sometimes just feeling good pays for things.
So intellectual capital, emotional capital.
Emotional capital, just... Yes. There's a
lot of
package.
Different expressions on what capital,
human resources,
and what you need for something.
We do a lot of what would you call it, bartering, in our work, in our company. We actually we don't give lodging, but we give scholarships. We have a contract with a very interesting university, and part of the payment for a bunch of the people there includes tuition for a very very interesting design university, a private university.
Which one is that?
The Universidad de Palermo.
That's in Buenos Aires also?
That's in Buenos Aires. That's become like the epicenter of design, probably in Latin America, of industrial design. But we give that type of opportunity to people who work with us. And also we make them part of the story.
Through collaboratively working with other people in the community, right?
Right. When we say we barter, we've done some of our printing, our production, distribution.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to approach projects in which you even money sometimes, if you have a lot of money, might be misleading. A lot of times you really need to know where to put the energy for a project to start.
Yeah, well, too much money can just ruin you.
Definitely.
You know, having limitations can make you have to think hard about where do you expend your resources? Where do you put your time?
You need to plan much better. You need to do a lot more calculations. It's definitely more fun. Calculations.
Well, it can be more fun being limited. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, it's part of the creative process, too. I think if you get a design brief that says, okay, do whatever, it's one thing.
Yeah.
And you might be just like, you know, doing whatever.
Well, it's like the case of the studio. I think this is a lot more interesting than if the station had a lot of money. Mm-hmm. This is all reclaimed lumber. And as you can see, the beautiful trim around the window is sort of Adirondack style. It's very rustic. But it has a quality of authenticity that's rather pleasant. Well, of course, that's sort of like the flip side of what you're doing with your resurrection leather, which is perfect in every way. So have you considered, you know, larger pieces other than desk accessories and desktop things?
Yeah, we're definitely taking our know-how and our acquired techniques for treating the leather into different kind of fields, I would call them. We're trying some things in fashion accessories. We're going into furniture design.
That would be great.
Yeah.
A totally leather chair.
Totally leather.
That could be
no
a lot
wood,
of fun.
No steel structure.
So you get into tetrahedral sort of stiff plane structures.
Yeah, we're taking a lot of those roads and exploring. And still this is just phase one in the innovation process we are approaching the leather. Because right now we're just taking the material as it comes, as the industry already has it going for ages, and manipulating it. Our second stage, that is still in the dashboard, I would say, is how to innovate in the way we conceive the material, the leather. Imagine if you start blow molding.
Wow.
How do you call it?
Roto molding or injection molding. If we could take leather to a liquid state, then we could inject it, we can extrude it.
Wow.
We are even interested, but these are a bit more far-fetched. As say you're starting to grow skin and tissue, human tissue in petri dishes, you know, in test tubes, we are imagining laboratories and factories where they grow leather artificially in the form. Imagine harvesting shoes in that actual shape. It's a bit ridiculous to take the dead animal, treat the leather, then cut and sew and mold it to fit the foot. Why can't we just grow shoes? Literally.
That's a really interesting idea.
When
they're really young, little clone things, you harvest them for baby shoes. And then when they get really
That's
old,
right.
It's for basketball players who need a very large shoe.
Something like that.
That's a very interesting idea.
To not make it sound so science fiction, this sounds a bit cruel. It's done, and it's a way of thought. If you put a mold underneath the skin of even human beings, the skin will grow
you
and take
that shape.
Keep
coming back to, you know, human skin here.
Can I do that on the show?
you're allowed.
I've got to make a confession here.
I just happen to remember from history that a lot of refugees from Germany went to Argentina. And I think they had ideas like that during the Second World War. We have to be mindful of history in this program.
Okay, my background is in biology, not Nazism.
Okay,
all right. So I'm interested in what the skin does. The skin is an adaptation organ. It's a fabulous, fabulous piece of machinery. It adapts to climates, to hair, no hair, skin. Thickness, whether it's wrinkled or clean, humidity. The skin is probably the most adaptive cellular structure maybe on the planet.
And it's certainly an amazing organ.
It's an amazing organ. And that's where my fascination with skin comes from. And I think most people, it's an inner part of us.
And a lot of our approach to leather design as an emotional approach that we did has to do with realizing that leather, as in humans, is skin, actually. It's part of our daily life. I mean, how far are we from cows, really? And we are...
Me, personally, at a safe
distance. I can see some similarities.
At a safe distance.
Just go to your fridge.
But truly, I mean...
I shut off my fridge. I disconnected it. I decided I didn't need it. I'm going to do only just-in-time grocery shopping for a while, see how that works.
When you take leather as a skin, you can start imagining the kind of history every material, every shoe you have worn could have been through, the kind of emotions it has inside.
So being from Argentina, you're emotionally involved with your cattle.
Not necessarily.
Here in New York might be.
And well, we definitely eat that.
And it all started with barbecue. I can endorse that. I go on trips just to find new barbecue. You know,
have you been to Buenos Aires?
No, I haven't been to South America yet. I have to learn Spanish first.
I don't think so. You'll get by fine with English or with any language as far as eating barbecue is concerned. You just point. You don't even ask questions. You might not want to know the answers. You'll be eating any unimaginable part of that cow.
And as long as you have a lot of capital.
Well, dollars in this sense. I don't know.
Well, Nat, have you found some tango music for us yet?
We got some tango for you.
Let's have a little break.
Thank you.
Whoa, that was abrupt. Welcome back to Burning Down the House, brought to you by Fairway Market, number one source for all the ingredients of a fabulous life here in New York in two locations. This is Epiphany Feast of the Kings. We have Kings of Design here, and we just were speaking about growing in a high-tech sort of cloning kind of environment. Instead of taking a cow apart and then putting it back together again, growing leather in the lab. I mean, that's a crazy, wild, fascinating idea. Now that we're in a new year, starting a new decade, and I hope that we're past the fearful aughts, starting with so many dismaying things early in the last decade, going forward, what ideas do you have that you're working on that you'd like to bring out to the world? You know, you're a king, and you're bringing your presence to the world. What presence, what gifts, what things would you like to bestow upon the world that are just glimmers in your imagination right now? You said that you have a lot of different ideas.
Yeah, it's kind of a huge pressure right now to think about them, but we've been researching into this crazy ideas. We've been talking about, like, actually raising a shoe. That's a crazy thing.
There's a certain genius to that. That could just absolutely just revolutionize.
Just thinking about that. Even coming up with that, the idea or the thought of growing a shoe out of on a petri dish is...
Or growing parts of shoes by putting formwork under the hides of cattle. And we'd have decorated cattle that looked like shoe parts. You're admiring the... The listeners have to understand that we're in shipping containers in the garden of Roberta's restaurant here in Bushwick. And outside is the garden, and festive Roberta's customers come out and they gather around the fire pit. And they look in and they smile and they wave and they wonder, what are they doing in there? We really need to have a sign, you know, like the lettering that you have on your car that says, you know, Porsche. It should say heritageradionetwork.com up there. One of the things that appeals to me, and you're asking, you know, about my ideas about design coming from an architectural background. You know, it's about the ideas, and it's about doing more with less. Right now, we're constrained because there isn't money. There's a lot of intellectual capital, and there's time. You know, when you have money, you have no time. Mm-hmm. But when you have only time and no money, you can explore new things. If you just have enough to get by, all sorts of new possibilities that you didn't have time to research before become possible.
You know what? That's actually part of a great phenomenon that happened in Argentina in 2001.
Uh-huh.
A big economic crisis hit us.
Yeah.
And people, designers and creativity out of Argentina came to light just because people didn't have money, didn't know what to do, and had to reach out to go to the street to start thinking a way to getting out of that situation. And that was part of the Argentinian boom towards design. I think that was part of what's going on right now in Buenos Aires.
Are you having economic problems again there?
Well, everybody's does.
Well, maybe not as bad as it was in 2001. You had incredible inflation, yeah?
We had an incredible inflation, and yeah, a lot of business broke down and went, and it was a huge crisis for us. I would say even much worse than this world economic crisis we're living.
Oh, for you, it was absolutely catastrophic.
Yeah, definitely. But at the same time, it was a very creative point for Argentinian people. A lot of ideas started coming from nowhere, you would say, because people had that time you were mentioning.
So what did happen?
I feel that today, especially 2009, you know, in
that
my
was last year.
Yeah, well, today, but especially 2009.
So glad that's over.
New decade, let's go for it.
In my reality of what is, it is here in New York, I think it was the same feeling as Matthias is describing. I think there's a feeling of clean up, eliminating the fat, eliminating what is not needed, and just focusing on what you just need, just to be happy, just essentials. But not to be unhappy about it, but just really everybody's taking that in a good way. And I think in design, I think it's that's also taking, to me, I think it's leading to a more lean and more meaningful products, and not just...
I totally agree.
More of the same. Even if we look at an icon as Walmart, I think even Walmart is taking that road, which to me is a great hope. However, I think it's going to be a long way for Walmart to actually be a meaningful retailer. But
it's not about to go down the Target road.
Well, I don't think Target is doing much better. I think it's just the same thing with different label. It's just about the same thing.
We've discussed this before. I think the quality of stuff at Target, some of the stuff is arguably of better design quality.
Well, this to me, Curtis, I think all the big box stores are in that kind of situation that
they're just moving boxes, right?
You're just pushing numbers and trying to get in. Sometimes, you know, this is a conversation I had with Matthias the other day. Sometimes a product that goes through a process is cheaper than the raw material that created the product.
Yeah.
And to me, that is just it just doesn't make sense, and it's just really skewing everything on the consumer's mind. So we're really not valuing what is really long-term good, but short-term fixes.
Well, we can only hope that because people don't have a lot of money to spend in any old way, that it will help us as designers educate the larger populace about quality.
However, that you mentioned, I think designers can do as much as we can do, and I think we're doing a lot. And I think we will go on that road. However, I think really what I think the missing point here is, I think, is either the media or how the consumers get educated about what is good. It's what it's missing on actually focusing on the right things. I think
just talking about design on the radio is a little piece, but it's difficult without having illustrations.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see in television anybody illustrating how to make good design choices. If you're going to buy a lamp, what makes a good lamp? In terms of the quality of the light, mm-hmm. the quality of its construction.
And I think that is, you know, one of the main difference between American culture or European culture or American purchase decision is based on today, best price, and doesn't matter if I throw it away in 6 weeks. Europeans have a different set of mindset where they actually look at the long-term value of the things they buy.
Well, and that's been that way for 100 years here, longer.
Well, I think that is a new thing in the U.S. after the 50s, though, but, you know, after the creating this buy-throw-away mentality.
I think if we go back and you look at the history of, say, the Sears Roebuck catalog, you'll see that there was cheap stuff that was available 100 years ago, and so we're all in the same place that we've always been, and a matter of general education in design is something that's really not part of the American curriculum. It's been design education to a certain degree has been something for the elites, and it's unfortunate that it's not part of our school system.
Well, what I think it's one of the biggest problems right now is that the way we have conceived the world today, the economic way we have conceived the world today, requires this mass production and high rotation. That's the tricky part out of getting out of it.
Yeah, you got to keep selling stuff.
Selling stuff.
If you sell only a few good things, what happens to all the production capability that's everywhere in the world that's producing stuff that if people didn't want to buy it, there'd be a collapse of the consumer
that's
economy.
A tricky point. And plus the all this is driven by the high economic powers. People who can take the big choices today are the ones that need this system to still run like it's conceived. That's a difficult way out of the situation.
Yeah, I know. And now we're finding ourselves at the end game of a period of economic expansion at the beginning of the 21st century. At least here in America, I don't know if it got to South America, but there was a very perceived high quality of life because people could buy the things that they wanted very cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
There was a huge wave of production that just began to come out of China. And mm-hmm. so in Europe and in the United States, you could get consumer electronics. It would make you happy. You could get the latest gadget for very little money, throw it away, get a new one next year. Didn't cost you a lot of money, made you feel good, made you feel rich. And it was to a certain extent. This is like bread in circuses, you know. But we in, you know, Northern Hemisphere in the West, I think all experienced a period of feeling pretty well off because there was all this cheap stuff coming from the Far East. And now we don't need any more cheap stuff. Everybody's got 3 or 4 DVD players in their house, you know, of different vintages. And we don't really need Blu-ray players right now. You know, the old DVD's fine enough.
Mm-hmm. And at one point, you can start even thinking that at that point, we started even enjoying the products themselves. Most of the value was about purchasing and repurchasing.
Yeah, that's right.
And we stopped mm-hmm. caring about what we really were buying. We just needed to buy something new.
Right.
And that happened.
Well, I think to me that is what it changed this year. I think consumers are a little bit more conscious about it. And thinking about more of the long term and not just buying, just mm-hmm. for the sake of buying.
Well, in truth, I have to admit, I've now been iPodicized. And, you know, for not a lot of money, you can have one of the most beautiful, tiny, amazing computerized machines.
How much is it?
About $140.
Can you believe that you can make that for $140?
Yeah. If you're mass producing 50 million of them.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's a beautiful little computer, you know. And you could, I have how many songs? Let's see. I have on here something like 700 songs.
Yeah, that sounds, you're probably going to have 10 times more than that.
Amazing. But, you know, one decent iPod now, you know. I had never had one before. This is mm-hmm. good for the next many, many, many years because I don't need a bigger screen to see the little pictures at the video
now.
Camera. Yeah, it's possible. But I'd rather have this than a HD Blu-ray player.
Yeah, but that's you. But it's still the same game.
Yeah. It's still the same experience. It's yeah. still just music or just a video. There's not an improvement in the quality of reading books. There's not an improvement in the comfort of shoes. Maybe when you start growing beef clone shoes, they'll be more comfortable.
Yeah. But at the same time, I take Apple example as a company that has put a lot of effort in the quality of the products. And you see people
Absolutely.
Holding their iPods that are, I don't know, 5 to 6 years old, and they're still working very good.
Yeah.
And the other thing I found interesting this few last days here in New York, I've been to the MoMA Museum talking to the salespersons, and, well, approaching them about our product, of course. And what they said was value is that customers right now are trying to avoid everything manufactured in China. And like, there's a new wave of people trying to say, let's stop with this. That struck me as a surprise. I don't know if MoMA is a place only hidden by foreign people or not, but that was an interesting thought for me.
Well, if you pay attention to who's on the street, there are a lot of foreign people in New York.
Well, I have
to. I mean, there are a lot of New Yorkers, but as compared with decades past, there are more foreign people coming to visit New York than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
You hear every language spoken.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of fun, you know?
It's New York.
Yeah, but you can eavesdrop on people in other languages. It's really kind of fun. We have only a couple minutes left. I don't think of Argentina as a design center. What, you know, are new things coming up in Argentina? Do you have a national aesthetic that's different?
I wouldn't say there's an Argentinian aesthetic, but Buenos Aires was named Design Capital by UNESCO.
Wow.
4 years ago. And even though we don't have popular design brands, at least right now, and I think that is one of the main problems in the Buenos Aires design scene, there's a lot of creativity. You can see it on the publicity industry. Uh-huh. Argentina is very renowned for its advertising and publicity and all the
graphic design.
Also, but
you know what I think, Argentina. There's a great capacity to innovate and to do something with nothing. That is, I think, the core of the Argentinian, core competency.
We'll just have to take the program on the road and go down there. And
I think you should.
You're more than welcome.
You'll
to
be
have
surprised.
Any time.
Have some programs.
You might
down
stay there.
I might.
Yeah.
Well, this has been fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Today's program on Burning Down the House was produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. The next live program up is tomorrow at noon, Linda Palacio with Taste of the Past here on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. This has been Burning Down the House for January 6, 2010. I am Curtis B. Wayne, your host. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk with you again soon.